And welcome to the inaugural episode. This is Barry Selby, I'm the Passion Consultant. And welcome to Getting the Love You Want, for real. So let me just cut the music out again so we start talking. So since this is the inaugural episode, I thought it'd be good to start off with, first of all, telling you more about who I am, but also telling you what I am about in believing and can teach. As you can tell, I'm not American. In fact, I'm English by origin and have been living in the States, in fact, in Los Angeles for over 30 years. Growing up in England was a different culture, as it may be obvious to you. And it has always been part of my makeup, as it were, to be concerned about how people work together, to be a connector. In fact, one of my gifts has always been to be able to connect people and connect with other people. And to give you a piece of the story of why I teach the way I teach, it became clear to me looking back at my life, not at the time, but looking back, that we choose our relationships almost unconsciously. In fact, it is subconscious, based upon the model we grew up with. In fact, we base our choices on what we were taught by the big people around us, the adults, our parents, and those people who stood in for them. It could have even been peers in terms of, it could even have been teachers or relatives or even neighbors. But the way that we saw people interact, and it was never by what they said to us usually, but in fact it was by what they did, we learnt how to be in relationship by what we saw. Because we adapt, we mimic, we learn that way. That's what kids do. Those behaviors, unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you're raised, become the governance, the overriding rules of how you have your relationships. For many people, and for many of my clients, I've seen that they choose a relationship that is based upon their parents almost identically. They won't be able to see this, but from an outside viewpoint, I would see, and anybody could see, how the relationship this person has is so much like their parents' relationship. Now, in my case, since I'll be outing myself, as it were, I want to tell you a few things about myself. As I said, I'm from England, and my parents were together until my mother's passing recently, married for 59 years, which is quite an achievement. In fact, I'm very grateful for that, and I'm proud of that, even though I wasn't the one who created it, obviously, but I'm very proud of my parents' accomplishment. The thing is that my parents, to my belief, at least the way I remember it, were never arguing in front of me and my brother. We, in fact, had a very, generally speaking, calm environment. There was no abuse, no suffering, no addictions, no things like that. And occasionally my parents would have raised voices. But the truth is, it was always, my memory was, of a loving relationship. It was a very nice family to grow up with, frankly, and we're very grateful for it. Now, the fun part of this is when I went out into the world and started dating and having relationships. So my late teens, early 20s, when I was venturing out into this bold new arena of relating to the opposite sex, which is a whole other conversation I'll talk to you about later, I had the interesting experience of falling in love, getting together, having a nice connection, not necessarily in that order, of course, having a nice connection, really emotionally involved, great, wonderful, passionate sex, all the stuff was great. And then there was, unfortunately, a thing called an argument that would happen. Now, in that instance, I'm going to say this in simple terms, there'll be a difference of opinion. Something will come up, and usually it would be my girlfriend at the time who would have an upset about something. And that upset would create an argument, and I would shut down. In fact, every single time, especially in my early 20s, it would be argument, shut down, leave. In that order. And I would simply leave the relationship. There was no place for me to go in the relationship as far as I could see. Now, you may be puzzling over why that happened. Well, two things happened. One is that this situation where there was an argument in the relationship was a violation of my belief about how a relationship should be. I'll say that one again. Having an argument with my girlfriend at the time was a violation of the way I had imagined relationships to be, which meant it couldn't work, so I had to leave. The reason it was that way is because I didn't have a model growing up of arguments and loving going together in a relationship, because my parents didn't show me that, at least not to my face, and certainly in my own memory, which may or may not have been accurate, because as we all know, a memory can sometimes be inaccurate. So, what I know to be true is for all of us is that we have an imprinting, a subconscious programming of how relationships should or shouldn't be from when we're very young. Usually before we formed the social skills to relate to other people, we watch and learn by what is modeled in front of us of how adults, a couple, interact with each other, and then we use that as our barometer for relationship. And to add one more piece to my piece of the story, because my parents have been together 59 years until my mother's passing, there was a belief I had inside of the other belief that was that relationships had to be the right one to last forever, because that was the way I believed it to be. Again, this may not be what my parents had done, but it's the way I believed it to be. This is key. Doesn't matter what my parents have said to me, I had created and formed my own belief structures that I took as being the law in my life. So that any relationship I got into, from the very early stages, I could tell whether or not, in fact usually not, this person wouldn't be that one, because I didn't have what it was with them that needed to make it magic and make it last forever. Now, this hopefully makes some sense to you. It may sound very strange to say it this way, but this is what I believe to be true, and I've seen it more than enough times with clients, with everyone I've met, frankly, where I've seen how relationships that were early ones particularly, and for some it's their lifetime, are based in this premise. This is the challenge that we face, in that for most of my clients, in fact all my clients when I work with them, part of the work we must do is to go back in time and heal the past baggage. It's vital, because that is the automatic pilot, as it were, driving our choices in relationships, driving our way of being in relationships, and driving our way of losing in relationships. I hope this makes sense. There's another piece I had in my head, and I didn't write it down, so I'm hoping it comes back to me as I continue. So moving along. It's vital for us in relationship to really choose from a conscious place. I use the language I use in my video series, which is on my website, which I'll tell you about later. It talks about stopping the game of Russian roulette with romance. Because those who do online dating, or go meet people in bars, or you meet people in work even, first of all, the dating pool is much smaller than what is out there, the dating pool you're choosing into at that time. But the challenge is that you're looking through a lens of you're looking through a filter, not that way, not a lens, but you're looking through a filter that has been created by a younger perception of reality that's been distorted. Now, to take this to the extreme, because I need to make a clear example of this, this also applies to those people who choose to get into abusive relationships. And before you start going worried and panicked about what I'm saying, let me explain what I mean. We have this gift of having a strong, powerful, and automatic running subconscious. The downside is if we don't have mastery and interaction with it, it will run sometimes counter to what we ask for, because we've created a belief or a rule about how things are. Now, the example I want to use, this was on the news, I would say probably 8 or 10 years ago now. And it was a story in the South, I believe, where the police were called to a domestic violence disturbance at a home in suburbia somewhere. And the police officers went into the house, came out, I guess, a couple of minutes later, dragging the husband between them, handcuffed, big burly guy. He had his handcuffed behind his back, white beater T-shirt on, and was basically helpless, being dragged out. As the police were walking him down the path towards the police car, the wife appeared at the door, bloody, beaten, looking very, I mean, she had tears in her eyes, she looked very more tragic in a way, she had in her hand a kitchen knife. What happened next defies logic, but I'll explain why and you'll see why it is logical. She proceeds to run down the path after the three officers and the husband, and raising the kitchen knife, she plunged it into the shoulder, not of her husband, but one of the police officers. You may be wondering why this happened. Well, in simple, straightforward terms, what happened was, in her mind, and this is what was after she was interviewed later, after she calmed down and been through quite a bit of therapy, was she believed the police were removing her only source of love. She had been in this abusive relationship because there was a, I'm going to say this, there was a early implanted program, most likely from her parents, or at least of siblings, or somewhere in the family where there was abuse, that she saw as being part of a relationship. Now, and this is fundamental because I know some of the listeners, some of you, in fact, may have had abusive relationships. But I want to make it clear to you, you didn't go in looking for that. That would be a victim mindset, limiting and not good. What the situation was, is that again, the subconscious programming had showed up. And so, in the back, underneath the conscious mind, as it were, there was an automatic pilot running, a program belief that stated that relationships had abuse as part of the packaging. Now, if you're on Match.com, or JDate, or Great Expectations, or whatever it is, there is an absolute, how about it, simple terms, an absolute, I'm just trying to find a way of saying this. Let me back it up again. If you're out looking on Match.com or something else, you don't see people listing that they are abusers, or they yell at people, or they abandon people, or what, you know, you see them saying, well, I'm this person, and I have this lifestyle, and I have a good job, and I have pets, I love kids, etc., etc. However, you may find, if this is your situation, you're attracting to you a partner that will, if you're a person who's been abused, it seems that when you drew yourself this partner, there's no way you could have known they were going to abuse you. But after the relationship began, sometime into it, abuse may have started. Now, this also means it could be abandonment. For example, if you're a woman listening to this and your father was a workaholic and was never around, you may have felt abandoned by him, perhaps. And so you would be attracted to men who are going to abandon you, even though you don't know it when you meet them. The ones who are most attractive to you later on will abandon you. So how does that happen? Well, this is the keystone, as it were. We have, as I mentioned, a subconscious ability, a programming, an autopilot that directs us to attract certain things into our lives and a certain search criteria. It will override our conscious choices, or I should say it will bias our conscious choices. So we will, in fact, attract to us a partner, a lover, what do you want to call it, have you write the relationship title, who will exhibit those particular patterns for us to go through. And the key word is patterns. If you imagine how when you're building, well, this is a carpentry term, but like a dovetail pattern, putting together two pieces of wood so they lock together because they have matching patterns. You can Google search if you want to, but it's a very simple term. Basically, the wood has been cut in a way where the end of one piece of wood and another piece of wood fit together and lock together at a right angle based upon the way the wood has been cut. One of those ways of doing it is called a dovetail. Dovetailing patterns, dovetailing templates, fit together beautifully. And that's the model I use because that's what we do unconsciously in our relationship choices, is we find people who match our patterns unconsciously. Now, the good news is this is not permanent if you know what to do. The bad news is many people don't. My mission, part of my work, and it's in my video series, which I recommend you watch, I explain this more, that we must, if we want to change the way we do relationship, go back with a loving fine-tooth comb and resolve and heal and transform our past history. That simple. It's believe that was a segue. I wasn't ready for that. Okay. So moving on, there's a little nudge there. Yes. Okay. You know what? I'm going to take a break for a second so I regather my thoughts. I'm going to play a little song by a lovely artist by the name of Jenny Alpert. And her song is All We Need Is Love. And I'll be back in a minute.
I don't know why the world is spinning. The world is spinning in her own way. Think I'll cry from all these images swimming in my head. You know it's time to make a change for all the change we left to chance instead. So take a step now, forward to the side now, and don't you mind how to get ahead.
And again, that is Jenny Alpert. You find her on the web. She's a wonderful artist. Song is All We Need Is Love. And Jenny is J-E-N-N-I, Alpert. Okay. So yes, All We Need Is Love is the theme of the song. And the truth is, love has an interesting mix. Just to shift gears slightly. If you know your Greek, just to shift the spin, there are, I'm aware of, I think at least 5 words in Greek that mean love. One of which is eros, which is the romantic love, but also there is agape, which is unconditional love, philos, brotherly love, or familial love, I believe that is. There's a couple other ones too, but those are the 3 that come to mind. But I want to say that because love is not just one thing. There are many aspects to love. And in fact, some people have this belief about how it's vital to live in this world unconditionally loving everything. Well, in relationship, that's hard to do. Because in relationship, we have what's called emotions. At least certainly the women do. Men are more reticent in that area. But the truth is, we are absolutely emotional beings too, we men. Which brings me to another conversational piece. Actually, let me go back first and add another piece to what I said earlier. I mentioned about how in my early dating life, in my teens and 20s, I would be in a relationship with a woman, or girl in my teens, and then woman in her 20s, and we'd have an argument that she would start. Now, that's not blame. I recently was in a workshop, in a conversation with some people, and I learned a powerful reminder about who we are as men and women. We as men are instinctively, although we may not live that way, protectors, and we protect the women. So in a relationship, we are the protector of the woman who's receiving that. We take care of her. That's kind of what the society teaches us, because that's what we naturally are. Now, putting back in the context of that relationship that would end because of an argument. Yes, she, my girlfriend at the time, would want to start the argument, but the reason she started the argument is because most of the time I pushed her to that point. Because, and now I look back and see it so clearly, if I had started the argument in the first place, I would not be protecting her anymore. And through a very convoluted and dysfunctional wiring, which unfortunately a lot of us men carry, we would actually be the ones that would push her, our girlfriend, away rather than tell her it's not working. So rather than make her upset by saying, this isn't working, there's something wrong here, we would become the ones that would actually evoke a negative response from her girlfriend, so that she would leave as the victor in our minds, so that we would actually stay intact and in integrity with our ability to protect. You know, that's a big piece I just dumped in front of you. That's a fairly big concept. But as I've looked around this for the last couple of weeks since I learned this, it's so clear and so powerful how I know for myself and I know for many men, we've done that in relationships before, where we've ended relationships not by choosing to leave, but by forcing our partner to leave. Now, it may not sound like it's protection, but truth is, because we did not walk away and abandon our girlfriend, we were still protecting them in some bizarre sort of way. So that's the piece I want to put back in. Bring it back to the present moment, talking about the differences between men and women, about emotions, for example. We are definitely wired differently. If you are a reader of John Gray material, particularly back in the day when he was very big, still is, talking about men are from Mars, women are from Venus, that is a paradigm that makes sense, and it's true for most of the teachings I've studied with. Alison Armstrong, who runs Pax International and speaks on understanding men, satisfying women, the hero's journey, the queen, the king, all these different paradigm models, really integrates and complements the Mars and Venus construct. And one of my particular teachers I love working with, named David Deida, and that's Deida. You can find him on the web. There's videos and tons of books, some of which are my favorites. He speaks about the warrior and the goddess, at least the way I interpret it is the warrior and the goddess. Because the modern relationships has changed over the years. In fact, we are now, in some ways, growing into what I would call stage three relationship. I'm taking this from one of my teachings from a Canadian group that I used to be part of. Back in the 50s or so, was what was really the breadwinner and the meek housewife construct. For those of you who remember this far back, and you watched All in the Family with Archie Bunker and Edith Bunker, he was right caricature of a male machismo bigot, to be honest. He wasn't necessarily a nice guy, but there was a model there that many men and women grew up with in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, where the man was the breadwinner who'd go out to work, and he'd come home, and the wife would be the one taking care of everything. And she'd be the meek housewife, and it was a standardized model across all of the country. In ways, women didn't work back then. Women weren't respected a lot back then. And the truth is that we had a very fixed model that for many of us who were born in that generation, because I was born to parents like that to a degree, that my parents were not like Archie and Edith Bunker, no way. But my father was the breadwinner most of the time. My mum, when I was young, was stay-at-home mum, cooked and cleaned and took care of the house. Only when my brother and I were in high school did she go out to work. But my father was the less emotional by strong sense. Now, being English, that doesn't make it easy by any stretch of the imagination. And we are more reserved, stiff upper lip and all that. So the model that was back then, which was really my parents' generation, was the macho guy getting things done, taking care of stuff, wasn't very emotional, wasn't very available, but got things done, and the wife was the one that was at home, taking care of the kids, was a very nurturing energy. Then sometime in the 60s, and then bleeding to the 70s, back up a second, what I just covered, that was stage one relationship in the context I'm using here. That was the first generation relationship. Moving to stage two, second generation. In the 60s, particularly, and especially in the 70s too, when the women's liberation movement happened, the feminist movement stepped up in a big way. And on the outside, what was happening was women were remembering, reminding themselves, showing themselves they had the power that they'd forgotten about. And as a rebellion against the old, they said, okay, we want to take the reins. We want to step out. We want to go to work. So women basically burned their bras, cut their hair, took off their makeup, put on suits, took off their jewelry, and went to work. What they were doing, frankly, was becoming men, in the sense they were becoming the male counterpart to go to work. Because in the business world, women weren't available except as secretaries and basically the second level in business. Women were like taking charge again, so they stepped up, and they basically became competitive with men. Now, this started in the 60s, but went through the 70s and even into the 80s, because in the 60s, a lot of men at the same time were choosing to, I don't say rebel, but they would basically step out of their paradigm they're in with their dad and say, I don't want to be like that, I want to be different. So they would drop out of society, in fact. They would grow their hair long, wear flowered shirts, bell-bottom shoes, smoke weed, and just become mellow man. And that was the paradigm that some men chose to be their expression. But it was, they were becoming softer. Longer hair, flowery colors, pastel shirts. They're becoming more feminine. So what happened is the role reversal happened, where men and women became opposites. Only instead of being masculine and feminine with the men and the women, it was masculine and feminine with the women and the men, reversing it. Then it moved into the 80s. And that's when things became very equal rights. Relationships were 50-50. I have my bank account, you have your bank account, we'll split lunch. Where do you want to go? Let's know, we'll negotiate, figure out where everything's going to go. That was kind of the paradigm in second stage relationships. And truly, it was fiercely independent for both sides, because we're all getting our own salary, we're getting going out to work, we'll negotiate relationship. Sex could be an interesting game between two people who are basically competing for the leadership role. But it wasn't actually the ultimately what the ideal would be. So that was stage two. And by the way, let me back up a second. Again, to go back and add some more pieces. Stage one, what I would define as being very codependent, where one could not live without the other. Stage two, which we just covered, would be what I would define as independent. Because basically, we didn't interact anywhere except perhaps in the bedroom. We had our own lives, we had our own cars, we had our own bank accounts. It was all like, I have my stuff, you have your stuff, and we'll meet in the middle somewhere. And that worked. So you want to know about stage three? I'll tell you about that in a second. I want to say that one for a minute. One thing you can do is play another song for you. Just keep you on the edge of your seat. This is another love song by a good friend of mine, Eric Lumiere. And this one is called Breaking Into Love. Enjoy.
Yeah. your goals in life may kill you or may heal you.
And we're back. And I've got to apologize to Eric, to you as well. I don't know why that recording went that way. My apologies. It's a beautiful song. If I get a chance to play it later on, I will. Eric Lumier, L-U-M-E-I-E-R-E, a good friend of mine. That song rocks live. It rocks well in iTunes as well. But for some reason, it doesn't play back well here. So the love can kill you or can heal you. And that's so true. Challenge we have in love is that we'll wreck our lives for it sometimes, and yet for some of us it will build our lives. Anyway, I'll come to that one a little bit later on. Let's get back to stage three. And let me recap, just go back a couple of steps to remind us. Stage one, a relationship paradigm, is the codependent stage. The macho man and the meek housewife type style of energy back in the 50s and 60s. Stage 2, which reached its zenith in the 80s, and still in the 90s, in fact, was the interdependent relationship, where we had separate bank accounts, separate way of living, and we interacted in a very, to be honest, surface level. So we were actually more independent, so our relationship was very on the edges of each other in a way. It wasn't fully immersed. So it wasn't satisfying, frankly. It was missing quite a few things. Which brings us happily, conveniently, and perfectly to stage 3. Stage 3 relationships, which is the model that's birthing now more than ever, and I'm grateful I got to see and have learned and now teach how that works, is really where we've all been meaning to come to, at least to the generation I believe we're part of, those of us who are waking up and choosing a new way of being, particularly at this time of our evolution as we're getting closer and closer to the end of 2012 and the shift that is happening as much as we know. Whether you believe that or don't believe that, believe this. Just leverage some things. We as men and women are choosing different relationship now, different way of being. And I'll start by titling it, instead of being codependent or independent, this is interdependent. It's different. And what I mean is that for the men, we are finally reclaiming our true, authentic nature, our sovereignty. And the way I define it as, it's no longer the machismo, it's no longer the wimp. In fact, what it is a very strong spine, the power, who we are, the direction, the clarity, the mission, the vibrancy of who we are as men, with an open heart, with compassion and care for the world, for those in it, and for our partners. That's what the stage three man is. Can be called a king in Pax parlance, in the Alice Nonfunction teaching. It's also called the warrior, through what I've learned as well. And the warrior is a great title because it's those of us who work in a tribe, we work in a culture, but we're also very strong in our own right. The women. Now, the word goddess has been used a lot, but I'm using the goddess in this terminology. What I mean, in my sense, is the feminine power that is magnificent. When you women reclaim who you are in the feminine, you no longer need to try and be tough and strong and powerful in the masculine or in the male, because you don't know until you step back how much more power you have in the feminine. In the analogy I use, and I've heard this before from other teachers, so I'm repeating it, if you can imagine the biggest ocean-going tanker, ship, container ship, freight, whatever you call it, the biggest boat on the ocean, biggest ship on the ocean, that is the masculine. It's got direction, sometimes slow to turn, but has bulk, size, strength, power. The feminine is the ocean itself. I'll let you chuckle on that one for a second. Because the feminine is life itself. In the dance of relationship, the true authentic nature, we are two halves of the completeness of cycle. Not 50-50, but 100-100. Another one I teach is that we are not 50% of a person looking for our mate to fill us up. We're 100% of a person looking for 100% to share everything with. So we are yin and yang in the model of how we are. The masculine is the emptying out the void, the stillness of death. The feminine is the fullness, the vibrancy, the movement of life. We're opposites. That's why Mars and Venus is so true. We are different, but we have such a beautiful opposition to each other that works so well. So some more pieces to the conversation. And as we are opposites, like the flag cannot fly without a flagpole, and a flagpole has no use without the flag, there is a unity between the two. The other way analogy I've heard to use is how the feminine, the river, because it's flowing and it's graceful and it has this ability to go anywhere, and the river banks are the structure that hold, contain, and give that direction to the river. They work together. The banks are just hills without a river, and the river is just a lake without banks. So there's some analogies for you. Now, to add some more flavor to the conversation, I'll get to that piece in a minute. Let me come back a second. So the dance of relationship is interdependent, where we bring gifts to our partner that the other partner doesn't have, but we are whole and complete as we are, as ourselves. Authentic relationship is incredible. I was talking to a colleague earlier today, in fact, mentioning how she was saying about how men just look at women. They're attracted by what they see. Well, yes, and what I'm aware of is that we, as men, we are attracted to women by how they look. Not necessarily by how the women look as their packaging, but how they shine their light. Yes, a woman with, to be blunt, big boobs or a certain shape or very provocative can be very attractive to us. But the long-term connection, the long-term attraction is by how bright a woman shines her true nature, her light, her vibrancy. And most of that is not, it includes being healthy and taking care of herself, being in physical shape. But it's also about how she moves, how she carries herself, how she presents who she is in the world, how she decorates herself. Now, I know many women who know this, that the weight of the earrings they wear will impact their day because they're sensitive to movement. They're sensitive to everything. That's the joy and the benefit of the feminine and such sensitivity and gifts in that area. Women have a sensitivity to color. This is one of the jokes I've talked about many times about how the colors we see in the spectrum. For men, there's 6 or 7. For women, there's 30 or 40. You go to a clothing store. For men, there's, most of the time, there's white shirts, black shirts, blue shirts, you know, that sort of range. For women, there's blouses of different colors, of fuchsia, of peach, of pink, of flesh tone. I mean, there's so much color. I can't even keep up with it. That's the differences that we have. And that's the benefit of having the differences, because we honor the differences in each other, the gifts we bring to each other. Absolutely, fundamentally joy-filled way of being in a relationship. Now, I'm tying some things together, so give me a second to gather my thoughts here, because I didn't have notes, unfortunately. As men and women, we have a choice to step into a new way of being. We are called more than ever in this time on the planet to be more in our honor and our integrity. In the recent elections, there was a sudden increase in the number of women who are now serving in political office. That's a sign of the times. Not right, wrong, not saying what should be, but the leadership of our country needs to be in the hands of both men and women. That's a viewpoint of mine. Regardless of party, there's a balance between the masculine and the feminine that works in everything. It works in love, it works in life, it works in business, it works in government too. So what I mean also is that the women who get into that level of authority need to remember who they are as feminine women, not as men in women's clothing. Because that's what a lot of women act like. And it's a shame to watch, because that's the old model that doesn't work. So stage 3, again, coming back to the point, is the warrior and the goddess, the king and the queen. Authentic, powerful, superbly enabling themselves to be fully who they are in the moment, and having a match partner that fits them as an opposite and equal in different ways. One of my joy-filled teaching items has been to use the model of Argentine tango. Now, there's not many dance moves out there, a lot of couples dancing too, but for me, Argentine tango quintessentially demonstrates to anybody who's watching how authentically the partners are in their natural masculine, natural feminine states. For those of you who don't know the dance, and I'm not going to explain the whole details because I'm not an expert myself, but I've danced enough to witness the male, the lead in the dance, holds a structure, a form, a position of strength that the feminine, the female partner, rests on and works with. So what happens in the dance is the male leads, and basically he leads by the way he sways from side to side. That's how he's the balance point that she can feel into to know where he's going to put his foot so they don't tread on each other's toes. As he does so, she just moves back. And this is the basic step, so please, those who know tango, grant me this privilege. And the formal steps and the first steps, the man leads by stepping forward with either foot, but it's because of where his balance is that she can feel. She knows which foot's going forward, so she knows what foot to put backwards. Again, in perfect harmony, ease, and grace. As they're doing so, she is flowing with the movement. He is holding the structure, the direction, and the purpose of that movement. That's what his role is. As the dance progresses, there are certain steps where he will make a move and hold, and then she, in her flow and grace, can be very sensual, sexy, and provocative in her movements because the structure he created for her is stable, and she can play with that. Now, that's the perfect way the dance works, unless one of the other partners are out of alignment with that. So watching Argentine tango, this works. When it's not working is when the man, for example, isn't strong enough in his strength. And it's not physical strength, it's inner masculine alignment, where he stands and holds a framework that she can lean into. So as he's standing there, holding the space, he's holding that position. If he's flimsy or holding her solid, she'll have to brace herself without resting on him, and that's a trap. So what happens is, and this is the fun part, what happens is she will end up having to fight that role, and it's a pain for her to step into the male mindset to do the dance for him. I've seen people get very upset in Argentine tango. So his role is to hold the space of strength, of solidity, and a framework that she can play with. If she won't let him, though, because she's in her masculine already, then he's got to compete for it. It's not a pretty dance. So again, back to the conversation. The dance of Argentine tango is a great model, an example of how the masculine and the feminine can flow together in poetry, in harmony, in perfection. It's also the mindset of how we, generally speaking, are sexually compatible and connected. Now, I'm going to cover this briefly because this is a family show. I'm not going to go into explicit detail. But the language I've heard before, which I like, is the one, the ravisher and the ravishee. This is where the feminine loves to be taken by the masculine when the masculine is authentic. But if the masculine isn't authentic, she will kick his butt. The way that I've heard this described, and I love this look about it, is that she, in the feminine when she's single, is yearning for that amazing, authentic male person to show up in her life, the masculine warrior, the man who is her king. But if he shows up an ounce less than that, she'll cut him off at the knees because she deserves nothing less than that. So men, or words to the wise, if you want a woman of that amazing sexual loveliness and power and grace and flow and beauty, up your own game. Step into your authenticity. Be the best you can be at yourself so she will respect and love who you are and want to be with you. Because it's not about you get to choose and you have full control. It's both sides choosing in. So, there was one more piece I was going to add to that, talking about the way chemistry works. Oh, yes. As I mentioned, we, as authentic in our third stage relationships, the masculine and the feminine, the warrior and the goddess, work together beautifully. And this does not mean, in fact, is far from it, does not mean we don't switch roles once in a while or become both sides. In a loving relationship, when we are in natural repose, the man is in his masculine, the woman is in a feminine, normally speaking. Sometimes it differs, but normally. At certain times, though, both partners will be in the feminine, for example, when the baby's crying. They may both step into the feminine to be together on that. Or if they're watching football on the TV, they both step into the masculine because they're roaring for their teams, cheering for their teams. Or if they're doing the bills, they're both in the masculine. It's like logical numbers processing done. That's a masculine focus. He, in his masculine, might switch into the feminine to do art and crafts because that's a feminine creativity energy. So what I'm saying is we have both energies in us. We are fully capable of being masculine or feminine or both. It's part of our natural beingness. But our natural repose in a relationship in that polarity of sexual chemistry and connection, and that's a key, by the way, we can reclaim and revitalize our chemistry by remembering our natural residence in the masculine and the feminine. So these are core angles Sorry, let me say it again. These are core elements I speak from. They are absolutely fundamental parts of the work I believe is true. It's what I'm about in my life, what I'm about in my own relationships and connections and friendships and peer groups. It's what I've been learning and still learning, and frankly, even at this moment, I'm still cleaning up stuff from the past. One of the things I talk about is how we can relate to each other from a higher level, and we must hold that place for ourselves too. So how do we honor that and reveal that and step into our truth? That's for another episode. Because I covered a lot in this first initial or inaugural episode, and truth be said, there is a definitive groundwork being set up here, because I want to talk about much deeper things going along. And I want to just advertise a couple of things as well to you, but I'll do that after another break. And this time I'm going back to a classic song. In fact, I'm not going to do it right now because it ain't working. Okay. Forget it. I'll come back. So, let me talk about me, what I do, and what you can learn from me. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, and you probably see the logo shifting through, I am the Passion Consultant. That's my brand. And I'm passionate, absolutely, passionate about people having healthy and amazing relationships. I am a speaker and author and coach. And the book that you've seen showing up on the visual image of this show, by the way, is called 50 Ways to Love Your Lover. It is 50 relationship principles, of which I think are 3 or 4 I may have covered in this episode. But you want the rest, get the whole book. So just so you know, you can go to my website and read more about me at thepassionconsultant.com. And if you want to get the book, you can certainly do that. It's in digital format right now. There is an audio version coming, I believe. There's been a rumor of that because people keep asking me for it. And also a physical version at some point. But right now the digital version is doing well. Great to use on your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, computer, etc., etc. If you go to thepassionconsultant.com/book, you can read about it there. And I do highly recommend you watch my video series because I covered in this show, I talked about really about healing the past, the baggage from the past. That's one of the 3 keys. But there's 3 keys, as I mentioned, in my video series on my website. So go to thepassionconsultant.com and you can click on the image or just go straight to the welcome page and find out more about what I'm about. Simply said, I am passionate about this. I look forward to hearing you on other shows. I am planning to have some guests on down the road. And I certainly welcome your emails and calls. You can email me by sending a message to Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, at thepassionconsultant.com. If you want to work with me, I have some space in my calendar. Feel free to fill out the client contact form that's on there too. So, having said all that, I want to say that there's more to this conversation. And I'm looking for ways to put it in simple language. Bear with me. I'm wrapping up and I'm jumping ahead of the game. This opportunity you have to have a relationship with your partner. If you're already married, you're in a relationship, great. But make it the best you've ever had. Put your love, your passion, your joy, your celebration into it to have an incredible possibility of relationship, romance, and joy and love and everything possible. If you're single, don't settle. If you're single and you've had some bad luck in relationships, you can have better. You can have amazing results, much better choices. Yes, I do support you with my coaching, but even if you don't work with me, take steps. I'd say go to my website and watch the videos because they will help you as well. There's so much available to you, and relationship is a powerful, wonderful place to play if you choose it. So I'm wrapping up the show slowly but surely, but I wanted to say again how much relationships are to me, how important they are to me. I've had my own history of dysfunction, as I mentioned, and I'm clear I want to help other people stop that. So here's a couple more keys for you before we sign off. One of them. You absolutely must own your own issues. Now, what I mean by that is, and this is actually one of the chapters in my book, it's come down to a lot of times with relationships where it's he said, she said. And it's one of those normal, unfortunately, ways of being. And the truth is that when you are coming from a place of he said, she said, you're lying to yourself and each other. Because unless you have an audio recorder, you'll never know what they said exactly. You've interpreted what they said the way you heard it. So my recommendation is for you, if you are choosing or finding yourself, in an argument in a relationship because he said something, she said something, doesn't line up, whatever it is, change the statement. Instead of saying, you said and I said and this and that, it's like, when you said something, I felt this. And your partner does the same thing. If you shift out of what you heard, which is basically propaganda, speak back to what you're feeling, which is the truth, you will shift the conversation into an authentic expression of what's going on a feeling level. For example, if you're with somebody and they are upset with you because they thought you said something but you didn't, and they said, well, when you said that, or when I heard you say that, which is more accurate because they heard, not what you said, there is, say it again, when you said that, what I heard was whatever it was. But the key part is what I felt was, and this is vital, is when I heard you say that you didn't love me, if that's what it was and what you thought you heard, I felt like I was losing you. That's the true distress, the true pain, the true thing that is upsetting you. What they said triggered it, but if you don't share what's authentically going on, they can't help you. And you can't help yourself. And so when your partner hears you say, I thought I was going to lose you, and he was like, your partner may be going, that was nothing, I didn't want to say, no, I was just, what about the toothbrush? Whatever it was. Taking out of the he said, she said, into the feeling level, and this is what I'm talking about here. You say, I feel, and you say, you feel, there's a chance to get to a deeper level of connection and communication, because 99% of the time, it ain't about the words, it's the feelings. So my tip to you this week, it may be every week, frankly, is always find out what you're feeling first. The words don't matter unless you know what the feeling is. So take your steps to that place where you can have true connection, feeling, and value. So I'm actually going to play, I'm going to try Eric, well, I'm going to go back and play Jenny Alpert's song again because I love that song so much. And I'll wrap up on the back end. Again, if you want to check out my stuff, it's at thepassionconsultant.com. And I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
I don't know why the world is spinning. The world is spinning in her own web. Think I'll cry from all these images swimming in my head. You know it's time to make a change for all the change we left to chance instead. So take a step now, forward to the side now, and don't you mind how to get ahead.
Shame on.
I think that may become my theme song. I love that song so much. Anyway, coming to a close, thank you for listening to the show. I appreciate you joining me on my inaugural trip into the ethers with Thrive Talk Radio and me, Barry Selby, the Passion Consultant. I recommend that you do your own work to really follow up with your own love, to express your heart more authentically, lovingly, joyfully. I'm passionate about this, as you may tell. So I do recommend, if you want to send emails, there's messages, a way of doing it on the website, where you can send in questions for next week's show. I am planning on doing this weekly, apart from holidays, and I love your input and your interest. I may have some guests on, too, to have some juicy conversations about relationships, sex, and passion. So this is my part of the deeper conversation. Find out about what I'm about, check out my website. Okay, and to go to thepassionconsultant.com. And again, if you want my book, it's on the page too. But take care of yourself and have the most amazing relationships you could possibly have. And I'd like to sign off with live, love, and laugh with passion. Take care of yourselves. See you next week. Bye.